Hello everybody, welcome to Hold the Line. My name's Joe and I'm a British force-free gundog trainer. You can check out my online courses at forcefreegundog.com. The newest course is called Training the T-Drill. You can also pick up a copy of my book called Force-Free Gundog Training, The Fundamentals for Success, which is available on Amazon's everywhere around the world. There's also an accompanying workbook to record your training sessions in. I'm currently working on a sequel to Force-Free Gundog Training, and I hope it's going to be out maybe in about 6 months. We'll see. That's all for now. Let's get on with the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Hold the Line. Now, I've had an interesting question, which is about Hold the Line and where the name of the show comes from. So I thought this was quite an interesting place to start. So I'm a bit embarrassed to tell you where the name of the show comes from, because, I mean, obviously there's the whole idea in retriever training of holding the line, you know, the dog not veering off a straight line, you put your hand down, send the dog, and they maintain that line. So I think we're all aware of that, hold the line. But in the UK, there's another form of hold the line, which happens on a shoot when you're beating, and the beating line has to maintain, it has to be kind of straight, it has to be in a line. Because what happens if you've got kind of a row of beaters and some beaters get in front of other beaters, then game can escape back between the people, and you don't want that. So you've got to be pushing it forwards for the guns, which means that the beaters have to be aware of the people on their left and right and have to try and hold the line. So, this is the embarrassing bit. I was beating on a shoot many years ago, and I think maybe we were slightly inept at holding the line in this context, and this shout would go up frequently, hold the line, hold the line. And so I had no less than the Toto song from 1978 in my head at that moment. And I'm not going to try and sing it to you because, frankly, guys, it's a little hard to sing. It's quite high. But I highly recommend that you have a little bit of a search for it, Hold the Line by Toto, and you'll see what I mean, because it's a bit of an earworm. And once I'd heard that in this context, I just couldn't stop thinking about it. So every time someone shouted Hold the Line, that this is just what I had going through my head. And I'm afraid that is part of the influence for the name of this podcast. So, what can I say? That's it, really. I think that says it all. Let's talk about things that might be more useful when it comes to training your dog.
Train your gun dog without force or fear. Motivate and educate. Hold the line is here. Prevention, repetition, generalization, motivation. Hold the line.
I have a couple of super cool things to tell you guys about before we get started. So the first thing is there's a podcast called Canine Detection Collaborative, which you might want to check out because there's an interview with yours truly on the most recent episode. There are lots of other reasons to check out this podcast, by the way, guys. It's a really good podcast. I highly recommend it. And they also interviewed me recently. So just go check it out. Canine Detection Collaborative. Shout out to those guys. Thank you for having me on your show. And check it out, everyone. The other thing I want to say is I am giving a Fenzi webinar on Thursday, the 25th of May. So this is an online webinar. So wherever you are in the world, you can access this. And the webinar is called Steady, Achieving Control at the Point, Flush, and Fall. And you can get this webinar via the Fenzi website. So go to FenziDogSportsAcademy.com and click on the webinars menu at the top and then scroll down till you find the webinar, so Thursday 25th of May. And what we're going to be looking at is using food and mostly toys and the flirt pole to achieve the principles of control in the presence of something which the dog wants. And it's how I begin to get some of these cues started. So to get the dog to wait or to whoa, to tell the dog when to get in and to flush, and all these kind of things. And the sort of the idea of something moving and the dog going into a position of control, whether that is stand or sit. So it's not on game. We don't get to the point of using game, although I think talk about using game, and I'm happy to answer questions from people who want to know how to progress at Undergame, but we don't really cover that in detail on the podcast, which actually might be a good thing if you don't have access to game, because 95% of this you will be able to do with a flirt poll and toys. So, yeah, check that out. Thursday, 25th of May, steady, achieving control at the point, flush and full. BenzieDogSportsAcademy.com, webinar menu.
Hold the line.
Okay, everyone. So I thought I would talk a little bit to start with about what I call recall to flush, which is kind of talking around the same sort of subject matter as the Fenzi webinar, the steady webinar coming up, but it's going to be approaching things from a slightly different angle and direction here. So one of the things that I like to do before I try to get sit to flush on game is to get what I call a recall to flush. And I'll explain why. So when game flushes, dogs naturally want to chase it. And here I'm thinking specifically about birds. So let's think about birds here and not ground game, because ground game is extra difficult and we can get onto that later. So think about birds. So when a bird flushes, dogs naturally want to chase it, but it flies away and it disappears and eventually is unavailable to the dog. Now, there are two parts of this that dogs can find reinforcing. Some dogs really want the thing. They really want the bird, and that's the reinforcer. Other dogs really want the chase, and they really want the excitement and high of something going through the air and them chasing along and, you know, beneath it. And it depends on the individual dog as to which of those two things that they find most reinforcing. So the first thing you have to do is identify which of those things your dog wants. If your dog wants the thing itself, the bird, then what they're going to learn over several reps is that they don't get the bird. The bird flies away, it's unavailable, and that's that. And what happens to the chase in that situation is negative punishment. So the dog realizes, hey, I never get this thing. It's a little bit pointless trying to run after it because, man, I just never get it. And you get a lot of the sort of oomph and drive and motivation coming out of that chase, and it's a lot easier for you to do the next stage, which I'll talk about in a minute. The other type of dog, the dog which really likes the chase itself and was really into chasing, if you give them lots and lots of reps of chasing, you'll notice the chase does not extinguish. So the chase stays really strong and the dog continues to want to chase the bird, and it may even intensify. So what you're trying to do is figure out which of those two types of dog you have. Because if you have a dog which you know they want the thing, then you can almost allow the bird to teach the dog. So the bird just disappears and you can wait and watch the dog and wait for them wait for it to extinguish this chase, because it's going to be easier for you to then recall the dog, which is your next step. If you've got a dog which enjoys the chase itself, then you might have to prevent the chase, because if it's inherently reinforcing, the only other option you have is to prevent it. And that probably means using a long line and preferably a front attaching harness at the flush so that you can just gently stop the dog. You can let them have maybe a short chase within the length of the long line, but not, you know, chasing fields away kind of thing. So that's the first sort of stage in this process. I haven't actually told you why, actually. Let's talk about that a bit more, about why we should do a recall to flush instead of a sit to flush. So dogs want to move their bodies when they want to chase. They have a lot of energy, they have a lot of go, they want to be moving. It's very difficult for a dog to be still, whether that's in a sit or stand, and watch the tempting thing depart into the distance. That is much harder than moving their body. And they can still move their body if we recall them. We're just replacing the goal of the bird with us. So instead of channeling all their running into chasing the bird, they can channel all that running into coming back to us. So they get to perform the same behavior that they want to perform, the running, but they're just not doing it after the bird. They're coming back to us. It's much easier to recall the dog. I also think there's a greater degree of disengagement when we recall the dog. So we're asking the dog to completely disengage from that bird, to take their focus off the bird and to reorientate to us and to come back to us instead. So there is a kind of big reorientation thing going on, and level of disengagement, which is greater than if they're still but their eyes are still focused on that departing bird. And so that greater level of disengagement is it also going to help us in the future? Because it's going to be there as the basis for this behavior when we develop it later. So those are the two main reasons why recall to flush is such a useful thing. And it's much easier, as I just said, than the sit to flush. So it's also a good place to start, a good reason to start with this. So back to where we were. So we've talked about the fact that there are two different types of dog. Because not two different, there's billions of different types of dogs, but there's two different things that dogs can find reinforcing. So either the bird itself or the chase. And you've got to figure out which of those two things your dog finds most reinforcing. So this is where you're going to put your recall in. So let's say you've got the dog which finds the bird itself reinforcing, and you have allowed them to discover for themselves that they're never going to get this bird, and you've noticed that there's a bit of oomph gone out of the chase. They're not chasing it so far. They've kind of given up on it a little bit. They're like, not going to get this. It's just not so committed, this whole chasing the bird thing. That's the point where you want to put your recall in. So do your recall whistle, which you should have already trained, and you can check out my website, forcefreegundog.com, for a course called Reliable Recall if you want to train an excellent recall. Recall dog back, give them a super duper amazing treat, and that's that. So that's that type of dog. And the dog that finds the chase itself reinforcing that you've got on the long line, it's very similar. You're just going to be holding the long line instead. So you might let them have a little chase on the long line, and that dog is probably going to be more interested because you're not going to get that sort of extinguishing of the chase behavior by itself. They're going to be more into wanting to pursue the birds. You may have to wait a little bit longer before you place your recall whistle. And the important thing to say about this is you have to really judge when to recall the dog. If you recall a dog while they're hell for leather running after a bird, they're probably just going to ignore your recall, blast right through it, and you're basically just training them to ignore your recall cue, which isn't a great thing to do. So you want to kind of think, when am I likely to be successful with this recall? And I'm going to place it right then at that moment when I can see there's a good chance of the dog being able to disengage from the bird. And this will get earlier and earlier and earlier and earlier until eventually the dog just does, you know, a couple of little pounces after the bird, and then immediately, almost by themselves, starts to turn and come back to you. And that's what starts to happen. You start to get this anticipation. So you develop this idea that the bird flushes, and then the dog anticipates that you're about to recall them, and of their own accord, starts to disengage and turn and come back to you, which is lovely. Then you can still recall them, even though they're heading back to you anyway, and reinforce them when they get to you. And by the way, it's another little thing to say here, which is that some dogs, when you're working on game, may prefer toys, flirt poles, tuggies, more than food. So you've got to figure out which reinforcer your dog likes at this moment as well. And that's important. And some dogs can really be into toys. And the reason for that, even if they like food at other times, they might really be into toys at this moment, is because the toy is kind of a fair exchange in their minds, I think, for the bird itself. So the toy is kind of representing, you know, the thing they want to get, the kind of kill bite, as it were, getting the thing itself, prey drive, let's call it that. So the toy can kind of offer that for some dogs. Not all dogs will kind of experience the toy in that way or be able to enjoy it as a reinforcer in this moment. Some will still want food more, and you've got to figure out which type of dog, what is most reinforcing for your particular dog. I've got Ren, the GSP, and she would much rather have a flirt pole at this moment. And I've got Rosh, my Vine Runner, who'd much rather have food. So it really just depends on your particular dog and figuring out what is more reinforcing for them in this context, being aware that it might be different. So you might have a dog that loves food for recalls usually, but perhaps when it's around game, they need a toy or flirt pole. So it may be something different to what your dog usually finds reinforcing. All right, so what have we got? So we've got the dog of their own accord, anticipating our recall, turning, coming back to us, and we're still recalling them anyway and giving them the treat. So that's excellent because we've got that disengagement from that departing bird by this point, and it becomes much easier to pop in that sit. So at that moment of disengagement, when the dog begins to disengage of their own accord and turn back to us, that's when we get blow our sit whistle and we stop using the recall to flush, and then we start to put a sit in instead. And it's just much easier to do it because we're not fighting that the dog's desire to chase after the departing bird, because we've already got them disengaged from the bird. We've already extinguished the chase to some extent. And so it's much easier to put in that sit flush at that moment. So this is kind of what I recommend. This is what I call recall to flush, which is a little stage that I do before we get into the whole sit to flush thing. And this kind of stuff is useful whether you have a Spaniel or a HBR, because obviously they both need to eventually sit to flush. So you can still do recall to flush to begin with and then move on to sit to flush.
Hold the line.
That's all for this week, everyone. It's just a short episode because I have to get back to writing the sequel of Force-Free Gundog Training. I'm trying to think of a title for it, by the way, so I would like your suggestions, because the first book was called Force-Free Gundog Training, The Fundamentals for Success, and I would like the sequel to be something like Force-Free Gundog Training, The Something for the Something. So we can keep the whole, we can keep this going. But I don't know what that should be. I kind of get a bit stuck at that point. So if you've got ideas, let me know. And I don't promise to actually use them, but I will promise to think about them. So that is all for this week, everybody, and catch you next time.
Hold the line. Hold the line.